Sorry.
Are we ready? I'm looking through all our attendees. Shall I give you another minute or two? 2 minutes. Honorable members, we are trying to understand up to where we will be going. You know, I always, when we start a new session, try to understand where we're going in that session. We had already realized between Ms. Fuyokazi, Majalamba and myself that we probably will not be here for dinner. We've been doing exceptionally well and progressing very well. And I'm now trying to understand up to where we will go this afternoon. Now considering maybe all matters. I see the hand raised of Honorable Wilson.
Thank you, Chairperson. And I think under the circumstances that, and considering the technicalities and what is involved in this bill, I think we've done exceptionally well to have got this far in so few meetings, because this can very often run into months. And I think in four meetings, of which two were basically half day, we've done exceptionally well. That being said, however, Chair, so there was a comment yesterday morning, and forgive me, I think you made it, that what you would like to see us achieve over the next couple of days is at least get to clause number 33. Dealing with matters such as this, where there's huge amounts of research, administration, writing reports, getting submissions ready, that's got to go to the secretary, whatever, is massively time-consuming, requires collaboration between, you know, the various teams and what have you. And on those grounds, we prepared ourselves very intensely to go up to Roll 33. We haven't gone beyond that because our understanding that that was the target and that's where we were going to try to go. And I know that's the very next clause in this meeting. So I'm going to ask Chair, and I'm going to beg the indulgement of the rest of the committee, that we actually end at 33, because preparation, particularly of the clauses that are coming that are very intense, very, very intense, that require a tremendous amount of work and research and consideration, that as per the suggested target of Roll 33, that we actually stop there and go on further in another meeting where we can do justice to these clauses with sufficient time frames to deal with it. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Van Staden, and then followed by Honourable Kava.
Chair, I want to support. I also prepared myself just up to the end of 32. So if I understand correctly, the member said we must end at 32 and start next week at 33. Everyone 33 as well. How can I also support, if it's possible, please?
Honourable Kava, Honourable Sengwa.
Thanks, Chair. I think we must confirm as ANC we are ready. However, discussing as the portfolio committee, it's understood if we are having some challenges, moreover, that we may not be having a dinner. I think we will go up until where it's fair, as you are guiding us, Chair. But we want to confirm as ANC we are ready. In the spirit of portfolio committee, it is fair, as you guide us, Chair, that we could end up at 33. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Makleva.
Thank you, Chair. I concur with the other members because I want to be at in KZN on Friday, but on Friday there were no flights. I have to go tomorrow. Therefore, I plead that this committee will end at 32, 33. I mean, Yes, I support that idea.
So, Honorable Munyai and Honorable Chirwa on the virtual platform.
Honorable Chair, I must say that as the ANC, we are combat ready, but however, we'll be guided by yourself, Chair, because we can go as far as 42. But look, you'll guide us, Honorable Chair, but we want to indicate that we're ready.
Thank you, Honorable Chirwa.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. We are ready to continue with the business of the day and continue with deliberating clause by clause. So we can continue. That's my contribution, that we can continue. Also, lastly, Sawan Amahleng, I didn't see you there. I hope you're okay.
Thank you, Chira. Thank you very much, honorable members, for your consideration of one another. We are going to end at clause 33 today. We will finish these deliberations and wish you all a safe trip after that. We're going to start with clause 32, role of the department. The functions of the department are outlined in the National Health Act and the Constitution and include issuing and promoting guidelines for norms and standards related to health matters, implementing human resources planning, development, production and management, coordinating healthcare services rendered by the department with the healthcare services rendered by provinces, districts and municipalities, as well as providing such additional health service as may be necessary to establish an integrated and comprehensive national health system, planning the development of public and private hospitals, other health establishments and health agencies as contemplated in Section 36 of the National Health Act, and integrating the annual health plans of the department and the provincial and district health departments, and submitting the integrated health plans to the National Health Council. Subject to the transitional provisions provided for in Section 57, the Minister may introduce in Parliament proposed amendments to the National Health Act for the purpose of centralizing the funding of healthcare services as required by this Act, and in such cases, the Minister may delegate to provinces as management agents for the purposes of provision of healthcare services, and in those cases, the fund must contract with sections within the province, such as provincial, tertiary, regional, and emergency medical services. Designate provincial, tertiary, and regional hospitals or groups of hospitals as autonomous legal entities accountable to the minister through regulation, and establish district health management offices as government components to manage personal and non-personal healthcare services. Without derogating from the Constitution or any other law, the functions of a provincial department must be amended to comply with the purpose and provisions of this Act, subject to the provisions of Section 57. Honorable members, I'm going to take hands. Honorable Kaba, Clark, Wilson, Ismail, Kela, Munyai, Chirwa, Howard, I'm going to repeat. If I missed out anyone, you can please indicate. So I've got Kaba, Clark, Wilson, Ismail, Gela, Munyai, Chirwa, Klengwa, in that order, honorable members.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, on the role of department, section 32, clause 32 as ANC, we entirely support this clause, but under the following reasons, I would like to go into specifics clauses while other members will also come in. Clause 32.1 of A up to E. ANC support this clause for the following reasons. Clause 32.1 A to E enables the introduction of the National Health Insurance Bill as an act that is directed at reforming several provisions of the National Health Act towards creating a legislative and regulatory regime that progressively moves the country towards realizing universal health coverage. That is clause 32.1A up to E. And Chair, we further say that clause 32.1B, ANC support this clause for the following reasons, that it affirms the provisions of the National Health Act, but the introduction of the National Health Insurance Bill as a law aims to reform several provisions of the National Health Act. Furthermore, Chair, also wish to confirm that as the ANC on clause 32.2.B, ANC support this clause for the following reasons, that it will not only empower but will legislate the long-held demand of the health professionals to control the budgets plus procurement and staffing of their hospitals so that accountability is not fragmented to head offices and other departments such as public works. Only then can management and staff be held truly accountable for the quality of care and in their hospitals and accessibility of services to those who need them most. So Chair, with those, I would like to confirm and reaffirm that the ANC indeed we support this clause. I submit, Chair. Thank you.
Honorable Clark.
Thank you, Chairperson. Section 32.1, noting to add that has not already been mentioned in previous deliberations, such as the NHI will override provincial constitutional framework. Clause 2, will this not raise a constitutional issue overriding the duties and responsibilities of the provincial departments in terms of the constitution? It is clear that the department in drafting this legislation had not undertaken proper impact assessments insofar as the relationship with existing health legislation concerned. The vague wording and that the department itself has no idea, sorry, the vague wording and broad powers conferred to the minister in this section makes it clear that the department itself has no idea how the bill will impact on existing structures and authorising legislation. Introducing legislation is already the competency of the minister and does not need to be repeated in this legislation. And then clause 3, I mean, what will this entail? I mean, we discussed in the previous clause the constitutional framework that's already in place with the powers and responsibility of the province. So if we also could get clarity in clause 3 what this will entail. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Indeed, what we're discussing here is the role of the department. And the role of the department is pretty much laid out in legislation and in the constitution. It is not the role of the National Health Insurance Fund or its associates, its bodies, or its committees to override the mandatory or the regulations, the constitutional mandates that dictate what the role of a department should be. You can't override that, because the moment you do, you then have to call for a constitutional change. If you're going to call for a constitutional change, we know exactly how that process works. We've just been through it with Section 25. But going through the clauses, things, and I'm going to repeat some of what I said yesterday because they impact on this section. So now what we're dealing with here is that all revenue would have been allocated by PES and conditional grants, that they will now be redirected to the NHIF. Provincial governments therefore will not receive transfers from national government to carry out their constitutional obligations with respect to healthcare. In effect, provincial departments will now become agents of the NHIF. Now, provincial departments fall under roles of departments. Whether you're a national or a provincial, there is a mandatory, there are mandates dictated via the Constitution as to what the roles of those departments should be. And as control over financing also implies controls over service planning, and that is spatial distribution, mix of health services, provisional health administrations, they would for all practical purposes cease to play a role. Accordingly, health services would cease to be a concurrent function between national and provincial governments, and therefore that would nullify the constitution allocation of these functions. Now, I'm very concerned about the constitutionalities here. You can't go through the back door. If you are going to amend something that is constitutionally mandated, then you must change the constitution. And then in terms of, I've got loads of notes here. And I talked about this yesterday, the establishment of District Health Management Offices, DHMOs, through the amendment to the National Health Act. These are established as national government components. These structures effectively strip away the power of the provinces to finance plan district health services, and they allocate them to the Minister of Health. Amendments to the National Health Act, in order to try and comply with this fund, further stipulates that DHMOs must establish contracting units which will receive funds determined by a formula from the NHIF to contract with primary care providers. These contracting units established as part of the DHMOs will be required to contract with the NHIF to receive funds from the NHIF. And I said it yesterday, a government component can only be established if the prescribed feasibility study is conducted and its findings recommend the establishment of such a component. There is no feasibility study to support this. It does not exist. It has not been done. And that refers back to the Minister of Public Service Administration in 2007, Section 107A1. So there is no nothing to show that this has been done. This bill and its proposed amendment to the National Health Act provide complete governance, which is a set of national structures that will be appointed by the Minister of the Health and directly report to his office. No framework, and we can't find it here, is established that makes the proposed DHMOs accountable to the communities and the services, the communities for which they provide services for. That is very concerning. And if I can go to the next section. I need to check where I am. While we're dealing with provisional health services, they would no longer receive financing for healthcare as revenue for further appropriation by provincial legislatures. Instead, it would appear that provincial health services would receive revenue in the form of health service reimbursements. much the way as the public, as the private health services receive them. Technically, this means that national government appropriates the funds for the NHIS, which then buys either provincial or private health care services. And this is what this is actually saying to us. So we must be, we cannot duplicate roles. We cannot have one override the constitutional mandate of another one. We cannot, or we can amend the constitution. You're welcome to go that route. Let's go through the same process as we have been in Section 25 and restart all the public hearings and the oral submissions and those kind of things. If that is what it's going to require to make this work, then that's what we have to do. And that is a decision we have to make. And quite frankly, I don't think we need constitutional amendments. I think we need to reframe the NHI. Thank you.
Hello, Lisa. Honorable Ismail.
Thank you, Chair. I'm sorry, there was we were not allowed to be, you know, unmute ourselves before the today. I just have a few issues that I would like to raise. Honorable Clark and Honorable Wilson have already covered me majorly. Clause 32C does mention healthcare services rendered by districts and municipalities. I'm a bit unclear whether, you know, this is referring to municipal health services as well. And then in clause 32, section 2A, you know, it's unclear what provinces are management agents of. And I'm going to specify again, you know, provincial departments' second largest function is to provide healthcare services. And by taking this away, this is actually infringing on the constitutional mandate. And I'm just worried where we're going with this bill when we are going to be facing so many issues, you know, with regards to constitutionality of this bill. Thirdly, in clause 32, section 2B, it is unclear, you know, I want to get more information, or it needs to be stipulated who will have oversight over the hospitals, you know, as they are designated. Thank you.
Honorable Geller.
Thanks, Chair. Chairperson, I'm covered. I want to support Honorable Kaba on clause 32, 1A and 1B on his submission. But also, Chair, the other issue that I want to raise, Schedule 4 of the Constitution is clear. Health services are concurrent and provincial legislative competence. Nothing in the clause 32 is against the Constitution. These services were developed to provinces by choice and can be reversed without going against the Constitution. It's legitimate, Chairperson. So I wanted just to raise that so that members, they can also and note that and understand that. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Munyai.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. I think I support what Honorable Kaba would have presented, but it's important that as the ANC, we support that clause 32.1b, as it has been reflected. In this context, it reads as thus: clause 32.1 from A to E affirms the provision of the National Health Act, but the introduction of the National Health Insurance Bill as a law that aims to reform several provisions of the National Health Act. I thought I should support all the presentation by Kaba and what Honorable Geller will have said, by just presenting what I've said on behalf of the ANC. And I must say, Honorable Chair, again, as the ANC will present, will submit all the written content from all our members. But before I could conclude, Honorable Chair, there's this issue, sir. I know Honorable Galak clarified on the issue of the Constitution. There's this issue of unconstitutionality that is a buzzword on the clause by clause. Remember the issue of cost, the issue of Constitution. Remember, before the Honorable Minister bring the bill before Parliament, this bill goes through the state law advisor, who give them a certificate, you know, that indicate that this bill met the constitutional requirement. It passed the constitutional master. Who are these lawyers and legal minds that doesn't understand law and that process from the legislative process? But the second issue, the costing is also done. And all these things get approved by cabinet, by the way. So, the issue that seeks to suggest that, hey, this thing has not been costed, this thing that doesn't pass the constitutional master, which constitution? Because, by the way, issues of right to health care, it's a constitutional issue. The people of South Africa need quality health care that demonstrates stubborn inequality. Thank you.
Honorable Chair, I was waiting to be unmuted. I don't know, I'm picking up a contradiction in relation to 31.2, you know, in contrast to 32, right, which states that, well, 31.2 states that the minister is the one that will delegate rules.
Sorry, Chair, I can barely hear the Honourable Chair.
I'm sorry, are you able to hear me now?
That's better, thank you.
All right, I'm saying with clause 32, I am picking up a possible contradiction, correct me if I'm wrong. On 31.2, right, which states that the minister is the one that will delegate roles and functions to provincial departments in the context of the NHI, obviously, despite what we are raising about possible constitutional assertions and legislative assertions on this particular aspect that might be contradictory. And second to this, right, especially on the issue of the powers that were given to the minister and now reading or going through the roles of the provinces is now in contradiction in what 31 is saying about the powers that are given to the minister. Where does the delegation of roles to provinces and hospitals end for the minister? And where do they begin, right? And second to this, there was an initial issue in the initial stages, actually, of deliberating on the NHI, on the role of provinces. And in fact, there has been contributions in this portfolio committee from provinces, if I'm not mistaken, I think it's Western Cape and Mpumalanga, that have raised a concern of being ostracized and stripped of autonomy, right, with the NHI. Noting that the fund is being handled centrally at a national point, right? Now, I'm raising this in relation to 32.2B, a slight digression, but still on the same point. Where does the legal autonomy of hospitals begin and where does it end? And how will it affect litigation processes of patients against the NDOH, right? And furthermore, does this mean that in the broader spectrum of things, who carries the litigation cost and processes of these hospitals, this including the private hospitals, which are not immune to litigation cases? It's still the state that's going to carry the burden of all the processes. So I'm asking about the legal autonomy. Where does it end and where does it begin? I think it should be explained in much more detail than what we are seeing here, because it's going to be problematic in the future. And perhaps this is another aspect that the parliamentary legal people can respond to, and if this particular clause may affect any other legislation on these issues that I'm raising that is not made mention of in the schedule. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Chirwa. Honorable Sengwa.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm a little bit stressed, but I have a clarity-seeking questions here. The department has various functions, including coordinating healthcare service rendered by the provinces, district, and municipalities. I have how in the municipalities. And now my question comes to, what is the role of the provinces? If, because as far as I know, the province is providing healthcare service seems to be described now management agents of healthcare services in terms of clause 32. The minister may propose amendment to the National Health Act in order to centralize function and healthcare service, and the minister may delegate the province as management agency. Because I know that there are budgets goes to the provinces. That should be worked with. If the minister now goes indirectly to the provinces, how these people in the provinces work, the MSAs of the province. That's why we have a problem in the provinces in order to function their work. Let me talk about KZN. We have a problem in KZN where we go to the MSAs and he simply says, I don't know that. Or she simply closed this portion of a center. I don't know whether this minister knows that, but they are manipulating of powers here. Let me have a clarity, Chairperson, of what is the role of municipality? Because I'm from municipality, so that I will be doing oversight on that. I know the district and the province, but I have a stress in the municipality. What is the role of municipality? If I can have a clarity on that, so that one would go to the municipality and do oversight. Thank you.
Thank you, honorable members. For myself, have I missed you? Skipped you? All right.
Thanks.
Yes, you may go before me.
Thanks, Chair. You know, Chair, just in terms of the constitutional muster, this is not true. When we consider that there are many cases where legislation has been ruled as unconstitutional, and that invalidates the argument that this bill is within the rights of the Constitution. So it totally invalidates that argument. And I mean, you just have to take the certificates of need in the Health Act being the prime example. Just because it's certified, it is irrelevant. So I would like to speak about the constitutionality on Section 33. Are we there yet?
No.
Okay. Then you didn't miss me, Chair. I'm just overzealous.
Honorable Chair, you missed me all. Okay, so here I just give my submission. Clause 32.2A, ANC support this clause for the following reasons. delegation to provinces are key to achieving equity. It will do away with the need for duplicative and complex public health sector funding arrangements. We'll make all services available to all people irrespective of the boundaries that presently limit patient referral and the portability of services in this public sector. Furthermore, clauses 32.3, ANC supports this clause for the following reasons. Clause 32.3 will see the amendment of the function of the provinces to be two stewards of the whole public and private health system in the province. As an extension of the national sphere and not purely the administrator of public health services. Furthermore, I also support the submission from Honorable Kaba, Honorable Gela, also agree inputs from Honorable Miyai. Thank you.
Thank you. I hope I haven't skipped anybody now. Let me speak to clause 32, subclause 2, which speaks about the transitional provisions and also about the proposed amendments to the National Health Act. And just to mention initially that changes on the National Health Act will be discussed, actually I said earlier in the schedule when we get to that point, called a schedule of repeal and amendment of legislation as affected by the Act. And then in general on clause 32, subclause 2, we need to recognize that this is key to shifting of the public health sector funds to the NHI fund, as the functions will be then amended or are amended to enable the strategic purchasing of personal healthcare services for the entire population. This will happen as the purchaser-provider split is implemented and the provinces are delegated on the provider functions. The purchaser-provider split that will arise from the creation of the fund is important for creating an environment where accredited and contracted providers and suppliers of services offer cost-effective, efficient prices and deliver quality healthcare services to the population. In addition to that, I want to talk on clause 2, subclause 2, paragraph C, that speaks to establishment of the district health management offices. Just to note that it aims to devolve greater responsibility to the districts and implement reforms that support proactive planning and management of the resources for health services from the public purse closer to the communities who are to benefit. And the introduction of the district health management offices also allows for localized services, planning and provision, thus addressing the concerns around the fund, centralizing all functions to the detriment of service delivery. And so I support what has been raised earlier by Honorable Members Kaba, Havat, Gela, and Munyai. And is there any other member who wants to raise anything? Any other? On the virtual system, Honorable Munyai?
Honorable Chair, no, look, for my part, really I'm covered with what, I'm covered with what you have said, Honorable Chair, because that is very helpful to the process. It is something that can really, it clarifies the way forward on our submission. I highly support what you're contribution, Dr. Jacobs, the chairperson of the portfolio committee, and I agree with the previous speaker, as I said. On that context, Chair, again, we'll submit the...
Thank you very much, honourable members. We're going to the last clause for the day. It is the clause 33, role of the medical schemes. Once national health insurance has been fully implemented as determined by the minister, through regulations in the Gazette, medical schemes may only offer complementary cover to services not reimbursable by the fund. Honourable Van Staden, Clark, Kaba, Wilson, Harvard, just give me a moment to, where did I start? Yes. I'm going to mention the order. Tell me if I didn't pick up anyone in this order or the hands which are raised. It's Van Staden, Clark, Kaba, Wilson, Ismail, Sengwa, Chirwa, Havard, in that order.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yeah, this clause is very vague. I think it is still not clear what the role and functions of the medical aid and the private hospitals and private doctors under the NHI will be, and this raises many red flags. We are concerned that doctors and other role players in the medical field will look for better opportunities under better circumstances elsewhere and even abroad. And this will surely have a detrimental effect on the South African economy. It is also not clear what impact or effect the NHI will have on Chapter 3, Section 12 of the Medical Schemes Act, number 131 of 1998, which is speaking about the funds of the council. We have a view that the impact of the NHI will have on the future role of these medical schemes and their staff members, as well as the funds that are currently being held in reserve in these medical aid bank accounts, and what will happen with these reserve funds all remain unknown. And there is also a question mark hanging over the assets of these medical aids under the NHI. I think government must take note that South African doctors, especially in the private market, strongly oppose the NHI, as they have been quoted saying that they, and I quote, would not support the legislation in its current format, as it would lead to a large-scale corruption, and that almost 40% of doctors would immigrate if a universal healthcare system was implemented, close quote. This was reported in the IOL News on the 2nd of January 2020. The South African Medical Association, which has a membership of nearly 70,000 doctors, maybe it's more now across the country, also stated that as an organization, it cannot support the NHI bill, and it would create a monopoly in the healthcare sector. And according to SAMA, the NHI will open its structures to large-scale corruption. Now, Chairperson, a great cause for concern is that the NHI will seriously restrict the functioning and survival of the 80 registered medical aid companies in the country. I think with our country's alarming high unemployment rate, this is a matter of great concern. At present, a total of 9.4 million people approximately are members of medical aids, and thus the job creation in this industry alone is significant. And if this bill makes the existence of medical aids superfluous, the great concern is that the current unemployment rate will rise even higher, seeing as these medical aid companies will have to retrain some staff members. So thus far, government has not been able to indicate how these staff members can be accommodated under the NHI, and so that they do not merely become part of the unemployment rate statistics. And what exactly the role and functions of the current pharmaceutical companies and the distributors of many medicines as well as private chemists will entail under the NHI has also not yet been defined either. And the current shortage of medicine and hospital equipment at our state hospitals and clinics will not be easily resolved, and thus the situation will only get worse. So Chairperson, lastly, Fingwa for unemployment rate currently at 34.9% as reported at the end of the third quarter of 2021. The concern is that the NSI will seriously restrict the functioning and survival of 80 registered medical aid companies in the country, and that will cause the unemployment rate to rise even higher, seeing as these medical aid companies will have to retrain some staff members. According to statistics released in October 2019, the medical aid companies provide medical care to nearly 4 million members and 8 million beneficiaries who are currently not a burden on the public health care sector. We must bear that in mind. On top of that, many specialized medical professionals will opt to leave the country and will have a further negative impact on our economy. And I think it's our view that the government's attempt to nationalize healthcare services and to take full control over administration and management thereof will mean that the NSI will ultimately follow in the footsteps, as we said yesterday, in the footsteps of a state entities. Thank you, Chair. That's my input on this course. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. This clause 33 is very vague, and I must concur with Member van Staden. There's a huge concern about the quality healthcare that state healthcare will be able to provide. If you had to look at the environment we operate in at the moment, we certainly will not be able to say that we are providing quality healthcare. And please, Chairperson, I must make it very clear that we 100% support universal healthcare, 100%. And we do believe that our infrastructure in our public healthcare facilities needs to be re-looked at and upgraded and made sure that we are able to produce that kind of healthcare to South Africans. There's a serious concern about the constitutionality of this clause, and we can say that this bill is constitutional, etc., etc. But I would really like to request a legal opinion from our state legal team, on especially with regards to rights to access, adequate healthcare, association, freedom of trade and profession, and if whether legally, in terms of this bill, that is not infringed upon. Will there be a guarantee that the quality of healthcare will be the same? How and how will that be done? There is no indication on what the NHI bill considers to be fully implemented, and clarity is needed on that. And Chairperson, if you look at Stats SA 2019, using a race-based rationale supporting the pooling of funds, arguing that in order to rectify inequalities to access to healthcare services, an integrated pool is needed. It has been argued that medical schemes are racially skewed to benefit the white minority. But in fact, if you look at Stats SA, the largest population that benefits from medical schemes are Black South Africans at 48.6% and the whites making up a population of 34.4%. There are also serious concerns based on South Africa's track record that the funds pooled will be open to corruption and mismanagement. Free Market Foundation has highlighted that 42% of the NHI budget will go to medical malpractice costs. In terms of medical malpractice. And Chairperson, when you look at that, it really gives us a grim picture of the kind of healthcare that we actually receive in the public healthcare sector. And that's an extremely worrying factor. And when you speak to medical clinicians in this country, certainly they are extremely concerned about this NHI bill. I mean, we've already got a severe shortage of doctors and nurses in this country. And many doctors that you talk to about the NHI and want to get their input, medical practitioners.
Can I interject quickly? Dr. Dlomo? Dr. Dlomo, can you switch off your camera, please? Dr. Dlomo, can you hear me? Thank you.
Lastly, Chairperson, a big concern is that many of our medical practitioners, as well as professional nursing staff, will leave this country for greener pastures, and that is a fact. Thank you.
Honorable Kaba.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, I think just to throw in some key facts here, as I would indicate that the ANC on clause 33, we support this. Chair, the membership of medical schemes over and above NHI fund membership will be a duplication of payment for cover once the NHI is paying for benefits. That's point one. Two, Chair, the upper middle class may still choose to purchase cover by medical schemes for benefits that the health system deems to be of unproven value or which the country cannot afford to pay for from taxes. Second point, Chair. Lastly, Chair, this cover will be very expensive because of the nature of the services and the reduced size of the pool of potential beneficiaries. So I thought, Chair, maybe if I could throw in those facts for us to consider in assisting the comments that may have been raised for clarity giving. So I thought I must indicate on that one. Chair, I wish to rise to indicate that on rural territory, the ANC rise and support this clause for the following reasons. Clause 33 is essential to achieving equity in access to the entire financial and non-financial resources to the national health system, especially human resource for health. The introduction of the NHI ensures that the fund will strategically utilize its capabilities to purchase healthcare services on behalf of the population through utilizing mechanisms to draw all sector resources, draw all health sector resources, public and private, by promoting equity, accessibility, affordability, and sustainability principles, which is very key. Two, Chair, these provisions must be central tenet to the health sector reforms because the Constitution regards everyone equally before the law and enjoins the state to undertake rational and reasonable steps towards progressively ensuring that everyone, not only those with control of resources, have access to the needed healthcare services. Three, Chair, clause 33 provides that these services, which will be excluded from the payment from the fund, may be provided through individuals through voluntary complementary cover. They will change over time as technology advances, of course. Clearly, it will take time for the NHI fund to establish the equilibrium and settle on the benefits that it will pay for. As benefits are fully paid for the fund and providers are accredited to deliver the benefits to all, it will be inappropriate to have a duplicate funding stream and therefore only the fund will pay for those inclusive benefits while medical aid schemes will pay for excluded services. As the ANC say, Chair, we rise to support this clause, and we are very clear on that. NHI for the people. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. So
with regards to this clause, I'm going to start with Section 27 of the Bill of Rights, health care, food, water, and social security. And it says under one, everyone has the right to have access to, and under subsection A, health care services, including reproductive health care. It states in two that the state must take reasonable legislative and other measures within its available resources to achieve the progressive realization of these rights. So a couple of things comes to mind instantly. So first of all, we don't have those available resources. So the plan of this bill is to, oh, well, let's see where we can find those bucks because we don't have them now, and who can we deny services to where we can get that money into our little fund. So you do not have the available resources to implement this bill, number one. It means you have to find the money, and we've not questioned the constitutionality on that. And it says to achieve the progressive realization of these rights. Well, because of lack of resources, under budgeting, mismanagement, PPE, whatever, blame what you like. What we have seen is not the progressive realization of these rights. And in actual fact, what we have seen is a steadily collapsing health system and a regression of the realization of these rights. So to then go to Clause 33, and keeping those kind of things in mind, the current subsidy for medical schemes would be removed. You're going to take those away. No, I need to find the bucks now. I need to find the available resources. So, get rid of the medical aids, and let's take the bucks that we give them to now justify this clause in Section 27 of the Bill of Rights. So the current subsidy for medical schemes would be removed and redirected to the NHI. The removal of this subsidy would have the immediate implication that lower income medical scheme members, and these are very, very mostly are pensioners, elderly people, will have to drop their coverage and try and access coverage through provincial administrations, which will, number one, which very for a lot of them is very difficult, and two, it's going to severely increase the burden on your public. These right now are a bloody shambolic and a disgrace. The NHI framework also envisages the removal of the system of mandatory minimum benefits, which medical schemes must cover, and this is problematic. The existing framework prevents medical schemes from structuring their coverage to exclude people with pre-existing medical conditions and who have poor health status, and again, generally elder people. So you're putting them under more severe pressure now. And what concerns me, and it's around medical schemes, but it's slightly off the mark. So what happens to the protected coverage, like the road accident fund and the compensation for accidents and injuries on duty? All of a sudden, these have disappeared off the framework. They're not even mentioned here. But those are protected rights, and I think we need to follow up just exactly what you intend to do about those when you change these bills. And then ultimately, the ultimate framework, as implied in this bill, is that general taxes would be increased to at least the equivalent to the absolute values of what medical scheme members were contributing voluntarily for their own coverage. This would amount to, and I think this came from the Davis report, about 3.5 of GDP or higher in our current situation and economic crisis in this country. Not even close. We're way beyond that. This cannot be afforded. The overall framework illustrates that one monopoly public structure would now purchase all needed healthcare goods and services in South Africa. And it is suggested that the NHIF would make services compete for contracts. We're now dealing with the freedom of trade, and I think that is an issue. So people are protected under Section 27 of the Act and are entitled to the access to proper health care, including reproductive health. When you cannot, as a government, provide that, and you cannot, and there are not resources, we are under budgeted, we are understaffed, and we have no infrastructure. And you now want to take what little chance they have, and they use medical schemes to access healthcare that you cannot provide, and you then want to deny that too. You cannot tell me that what we are discussing here is constitutional. I thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I also have quite a bit to say on this clause. So there are concerns as to what would happen to medical schemes, as most patients will not be able to afford both the NHI and medical scheme contributions. Therefore, you know, it will be critical to ensure that the complementary services of medical schemes to the do not actually encompass essential population health needs that would limit the fund's capacity to achieve equity in, you know, access of universal healthcare, which I want to again reiterate, we totally, you know, agree and are for universal healthcare to everybody. Secondly, you know, the complementary nature of NHI and medical scheme benefits need to be clarified in line with the Medical Schemes Act Amendment Bill. All these things are not specified in this section of the bill. Now, there are significant uncertainties in the nature of coverage between medical schemes and the NHI. You know, clarity is needed regarding what benefits medical schemes will be permitted to cover. There's also a significant risk of increased out-of-pocket payments if medical schemes are prohibited from funding these services. My third point, medical schemes will be prohibited from providing care that duplicates care offered by the NHI fund. Now, South Africa would be, you know, globally unique in that its system of NHI would not only apply to the NHI, but to the whole, you know, basically the whole healthcare sector. This would make the NHI again unconstitutional. I just want to highlight that, you know, the governance structures of the NHI fund must be aligned with best practice standards in order to ensure that the NHI provides essential health needs. Otherwise, most people would have to then resort to medical aid as well. And as stated before, considering the social impact where we are in this country, especially after COVID, the unemployment crisis that we, you know, facing in this country, people cannot afford it. And sections of the Constitution highlight the effective provision of healthcare services to the country. My next point, there are fewer details around the role of the medical aid presented in the NHI bill, that's clause 3, in comparison to the white paper. Now, you know, it's actually very important, it's actually critical to ensure that these complementary services do not encompass essential health needs that would limit the fund's capacity to achieve, again, equity and ultimately universal health care. And I want to again highlight, I think Lindy has highlighted it, but I want to highlight it again. Clause 33 refers to the role of medical schemes, but there is no reference in the NHI bill to other funders of healthcare in South Africa. Again, there's lots of gaps in this bill, and I think all these need to be highlighted, and all clarity-seeking questions need to be replied to. Now, the NHI may never be fully implemented, and that's what I'm worried about. So where does this leave people that usually have medical aid? You know, in its current form, Clause 33 of the NHI bill probably constitutes an unconstitutional infringement on the right to health care as contemplated in Section 27 of the Constitution. And lastly, this clause does not give much information. You know, it's very, very vague. Does this mean that private medical schemes can be used immediately to cover healthcare services not covered by the NHI, or only once it's fully implemented? And when would that be? More specifics need to be provided so that this, you know, there's clarity on this matter and people actually understand where we're going with this NHI fund or NHI bill. Also, lastly, there is no indication in the bill how medical malpractice insurance would be dealt with in the NHI environment. I think this also need to be specified, you know, and clarity. They must, all these things must be clarified as a section of the bill. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think you know we are all contesting this.
Sorry, Honorable Chirwa, Maslengwa now. But you, Maslengwa? Maslengwa?
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me concur with the Ms. Clark in connection all this. The medical schemes in terms of clause 33. This clause to me said once the NHI is fully implemented, may only offer complementary services, of which there is no definition what is complementary services means or guidance exist to as to what complementary services include. As I have hold the medical scheme, I am a member of medical scheme, but I don't know what is complementary services. I thank you.
Honorable Chirwa.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think there's a high contestation of this clause, but for broadly very different reasons, right? On my part, I just want to raise a few issues that I think are not considered for this particular clause. And the first one is the issue of medical insurance, right? Which for the past few years has been wrongfully regulated by the CMS, the Council of Medical Aid Schemes, despite the fact that we have raised this issue. It has obviously been ignored because of the blatant abuse of power of ministers who don't want to do the right thing. I mean, medical insurance should have been regulated by entities that regulate insurance to begin with. And I particularly want to know what the impact of the NHI is in relation to medical insurance. What happens in the instance where a person in their respective right, number two, in the same breath, what happens in the instance that a person in their respective right does not want to register to form part of the NHI or doesn't register to form part of the NHI? Will utilizing medical insurance or medical aid outside of the constraints that you've made possible in this particular bill be considered an abomination? How will persons who do not register for the NHI, how will they be treated in relation to what kind of services they can access and the other alternative avenues that they will then require in that instance? And thirdly, you know, it's quite sad and unfortunate that we continue to use Black people and our desperation for quality healthcare as bait on both sides, right? For instance, on the issue of the two-tier system, you know, as something that will lure Black people to support the NHI, it's quite unfortunate that we have gone to this particular extent, because the two-tier system does not get eradicated because the NHI is in full swing. There is still the private sector and there is still the public sector. So we must not abuse these particular words because they bear a very serious brunt, because you're creating an impression that there is a total collapse or a total eradication of the private sector or the public sector for the good of the public, when it's not the case. The public sector will still continue to function as it does, and only invoicing the state for the services that it gives on behalf of the state to the patients that it gets, right? And another issue that we also abuse that I think is quite unfortunate is the issue of access and equity. We've said this countless of times. If you live in Tsitsikamma and Stoves River, in Guava Juice, in Pierrefier, in Mischand, or any of these remote and extreme, where extreme and absolute poverty is the order of the day, you do not get to benefit from the NHI, because there's no net care in Mischand. There's no net care in Storms River. You will still have to wait for 7 days to see a doctor or to see a nurse. the NHI will not bring equity and access because infrastructure and increasing capacity is not a priority of the NHI. So you speak of equity and equality and access. You must know that if you live in remote areas, you're not included. The people that are spoken about are people who live in cosmopolitan areas who don't afford private healthcare. Those are the people that can travel, take one taxi, and go to their next care or their closest life care or whatever the private hospitals are. But for the rest of the people who are in informal settlements, who are in rural areas, who are in remote township areas, as we know many provinces and many areas to be the case, you are not a priority in the NHI, and we should not allow the abuse of our desperation, of the desperation of the people to access quality health care, to be manipulated by people who want to, who prioritize the implementation of the NHI. Do it with integrity, do it with honesty. There's no access and equity that will be ushered for persons living in the Eastern Cape. And we saw this even during the height of COVID pandemic, where people had to travel for hours just for a mere oxygen mask, because there are no private facilities in those particular provinces. So even when we address those particular issues, can we not abuse the desperation of Black people for our own concerted efforts and for our own benefit? And even on the issue of sustainability, taking the money that's paid to medical aids and facilitating it as the state doesn't better the prospect of delivering sustainable health care. Why am I saying this? The money that the government or the political goggles of the ANC are gunning for, by the way, by taking away from medical aid, can't even cater for 10% of the population that's currently enrolled with medical aid, right, for an entire year. Members in this committee, members of parliament, and any other person, for example, who is on chronic medication will attest to this. Anybody who has any extra medical needs will attest to the fact that even their particular medical aid does not benefit them from an entire year as it runs out. The NHI is a blatant abuse of our people's desperation for quality health care at the benefit of political gorgons who are no longer satisfied by what the public press can give them.
Just give me a moment, please. There's a point of order.
Yeah. Chair, I think no matter how we may want to throw in our comments in the gallery or in the meeting, there is nowhere as a portfolio, even our input here, seek to be within the abuse of Black people. And for that matter, we are Africans. And for that matter, Chair, there is no opportunity of a segment of a nation which we are utilizing NHI fund a bill or passing of it on it. So I think Honorable Chira must be careful in how she may choose to suggest that the portfolio is making use of Black people as guinea pigs, perhaps on a basis of NHI Act. That's not on Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chirwa. You've heard the comment of Honorable Kaba there.
Yes, it's quite unfortunate, and I will keep saying this again. Like, this portfolio committee and the members of this portfolio
Honorable
committee.
Honorable Chirwa, no man.
No. I'm speaking, Chair. I'm still on the floor.
But
why am I being shut up now?
Incorrect.
Why am I being shut up? I can't have an opinion on Black people. Me, I can't opine on Black people.
What makes you special? I'm a Black person too. I'm a Black person too. Doesn't make you a specialist on Black people.
There's
an order that's been raised, and you are abusing me now.
I can talk about.
Can you hold on for a little bit while I talk? Can you hold on while I talk, please? Try to have order in yourself. There's a point of order raised. I gave you an opportunity to comment on the order that's raised, but not for you to shout at us and to abuse us here. This has not been a good day. You are abusing us as a portfolio committee. We are members equally to yourself as members of this portfolio committee. Please, I am asking you kindly, let's refrain from saying these insulting things to other people, especially people who serve on the same committee as yourself. I'm going to give you another opportunity now. It would really be very nice of you and courteous of you if you just say, I'm sorry about saying these things about other people. I'll give you another opportunity. Hope it goes better.
Thank you for the privilege that I have as a member of parliament to opine on issues to relating to this bill, that I'm able to speak again. I have absolutely every reason, every right to make a comment about Black people in this portfolio committee. If I am no longer allowed to speak about Black people or how I think that Black people are being abused in the Parliament of South Africa, can it be put in written form that Honorable Chira should no longer speak about Black people being abused or manipulated, or the fact that Black people are desperate for healthcare, that their desperation, our desperation, is utilized for political ends? I need to know, what is it that I can no longer say in this portfolio committee? Because everything I say that makes anyone feel uncomfortable, I can no longer say anymore, which is absolutely unacceptable. I should be allowed to speak as I have done. I gave proper factual reasons.
Thank you.
On why this particular...
No, you've been given enough time. Honorable Chirwa, we are talking about a clause. It is clause 33 of our bill. So we are not... I am... myself not obstructing you from saying what you want to say, but it is not the place, it's not the time. As I say to another honorable member earlier, you do have an opportunity to debate in parliament, in the National Assembly. Use that opportunity to raise what you want to raise. We are here on a particular topic, and you cannot come and derail the work that we have been doing. So in that case, if you continue to do that right now, then that's the moment I'm going to remove you from this platform. Please conclude what you wanted to say, but don't go down that road. Thank you.
Thank you very much. In conclusion, there is no such thing as a two-tier system being abolished by the NHI. The private sector will still exist. The public sector will still exist. And the private sector will be claiming back from the state. And second to that, access and equity are not issues that will be resolved by the NHI. If you live in Sisikama, in Storms River, in any remote area in the KZN, and in the Northwest in Mpumalanga, where there is no net care and life care, the NHI is not for you, as you will still be regarded. You will still have to go to a nearest clinic, to still go to the nearest doctor, who are not even there in those remote areas. So when we speak about issues of equity and access, we must not let go or forget the people that don't even have the basic access that we think is actually common, but isn't, but it's only common in cosmopolitan areas. Sustainability will obviously be an issue, because taking money from a sector, which is medical aid schemes, that can't even cater for 10% of the population, to want it to supplement the 70% of the population, will not resolve the crisis of sustainability and the fact that quality healthcare and access, especially because the private sector will always prioritize its profits. So even in this particular clause, we must be cognizant of the fact that these issues that we claim to be addressed by the NHI, sustainability, two-tier system, access and equity, are not an actual representation of what will happen when implementation takes place, because this country has been split across from a very long time, and it has not been resolved infrastructurally, it has not been resolved scientifically. And for persons, I will repeat this because I have the right to say it as representing my constituency, Black people in the Eastern Cape, in remote areas, the NHI is not for you, because you do not have a net care that takes you away from you.
Thank you, Honorable Chirwa. You're going to force me at some stage to put a time limit. Don't go down that road, please. Thank you. Honorable members, that has brought us to the end. Any other hands? Honorable
yes.
Kaba, Honorable Havard. Sorry, I have now not taken your hands.
Yes. Thank you, Honorable Chair. Here, I just fully support the submission made by Honorable Kaba. And I hope NHI to be implemented as soon as possible for people of the South Africa. Thank you.
Honorable Kaba.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I think we must, I wish to raise the following sense, that the role of medical aid scheme within a future universal health system must be considered within the current context of the existing two-tier health system. Thus, within the South African context, it is important that the government intervenes decisively so that the fragmentation in funding mechanism that adversely impacts the performance of the current health system is not continued under NHI. There is scarcity of resources in South Africa that dictates not only the establishment of NHI, which optimally uses such resources to benefit the majority of the population, but also one that has relatively low administrative costs and that precludes the possibility of health services. It is also incumbent on government to protect the public from products that they believe cover their health requirements when that is in fact not the case. Okay. The other objectives of the NHI to optimize the utilization of available resources, including financial and human resources, if people could effectively insure against the same healthcare cost twice. Moreover, such a system is more vulnerable to fraud and manipulation by the unscrupulous, which means that greater administrative expense will have to be incurred by NHI to avoid the potential fraud. For example, a payment by the NHI and by a medical scheme to the same health care provider for the same health care services rendered to one patient is not only wasteful but unconscionable. The other thing is that since the principle of universal coverage and not allowing people to opt out of NHI has been adopted, and comprehensively, a package of care under NHI is envisaged, allowing individuals to purchase private health care cover for the same package of care for medical aid scheme would constitute a significant waste of precious resources in a country that can ill afford it. My last 2 points here will be that South Africa has not achieved universal health coverage. One of the main obstacles towards achieving universal health coverage is because of the three pillars of the universal health coverage is financial risk protection. The current fragmentation in the health system is because of the multiple funding pools exaggerated by the existence of the multiple inequitable funding pools. It is therefore important that the country is able to use all its available resources, including those that reside in the medical aid scheme industry, that is also a beneficiary of public funding, to ensure that all in the population benefit from available funding resources. Medical aid scheme funding for healthcare usually ends with the termination of person's employment. For example, upon retirement or retrenchment, which means that such people will then fall back onto NHI health services benefits. This intermittent absence of the NHI system in terms of claiming NHI benefits will render budgeting and financial planning a more difficult exercise for the NHIF chair. For South African context, it is necessary to take into account the realities that however comprehensive the NHI health services benefits may be, there will always be some healthcare services that NHI does not cover. Whether this is due to a lack of resources or the nature of healthcare services, though ethically acceptable, does not fit into mainstream for medical throughout at the time. It will therefore be appropriate to permit medical aid scheme to offer complementary cover that is a cover that is not included in the NHI health services benefits. In general terms, that medical aid scheme should be permitted to provide, should include everything that NHI does not cover in health service benefits, including payment for medicines not covered in the NHI. I wish to submit those comments, because out of comments that have been raised to give clarity on some matters. Thanks, sir.
Thank you very much, honorable members. Honorable members, we're coming to the conclusion of our work for today. I would want to, as the chairperson of this portfolio committee, speak to the inappropriateness of some issues which are raised. I think it's very inappropriate for anyone to use this bill or the policies of the African National Congress for their own purposes to want to raise some or other populist ideas on this platform. This is not the place to do that. I have put that people must go and debate in the National Assembly. It cannot be real and it cannot be true that anybody would want to use the plight of our people, our disadvantaged people, to their own benefit. And that shouldn't be misconstrued as to being the case with this particular bill or any other bills for that matter. The common good of all of the people of South Africa is what is important. And that is what we're trying to create and to put in place. And our work is to deal with this legislation that is before us. We have three particular roles and all members know what our roles are. And we must fulfill those roles. One of those roles is to deal with legislation that is put before us. It is exactly what this committee is doing. And it shouldn't be misconstrued as doing anything that is not that. So honorable members and everybody else, the department, our state law advisors, our legal services, advisor who attended here today, we thank you very much for your participation, wonderful discussions, robust discussions. I'm sorry about some of the challenges which we had experienced. We apologize to the people of South Africa who had to see the challenges which we experience. So I hope that an apology will be accepted. We've come to the end of our work today. We will meet again on Wednesday, the 31st of August. We have a meeting planned between 9:30 and 1300 hours. Be mindful that we have to finish earlier on that day because of plenary starting next week, and we will therefore be using the mornings mostly for these particular sessions which we're having. We will continue with a hybrid fashion because of the constraints as far as the attendance at plenaries are concerned. So we don't expect everybody to fly, especially for this particular meeting when they might not be able to attend the other plenaries in person. Thank you very much. Travel home safely.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you.